Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. The sole focus of tonight's program is singer-songwriter Lakin. A Riverside native, she has several releases out there and has just started releasing singles for her next CD, Silent Conversations. The first one out, Echoed Love.
Wish I'd met you years ago. Good people are so hard to find. Missed out on you, didn't even know you, even though you were right here all this time. Why does life go the way that it goes? Why does one feel more than the other one shows? Why do I still feel all alone, holding on to an echo?
Echoed Love. Let's just go ahead and start with that. This is the first single. The release date was January 15th, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so I want to talk about this one. It starts really cool with a, sort of a fading in synthesizer and then some pounding kind of kettle drums going off in the distance. And there's this abrupt stop to that and taken over with the acoustic guitar. Some echoes, as it were, of that here and there later on, but I'd like to hear about how this song came to be assembled the way that it was, this notion of a somewhat electronic start and then building and building, and then before coming to any kind of crescendo, it just the sudden switch to the acoustic. Talk to me about how this came together.
Yeah, this song is really, really interesting in how it started on the music side anyhow, because when I first wrote the music to Echoed Love, I was messing around with my looping pedal. I don't know if
yes,
you're familiar.
Yes, oh yeah.
Some people are familiar with it.
Love
but
it.
Basically, it enables you to record on the spot, kind of assemble layers and play it back as well, and then add to those layers. And so I actually still have the video, just found it recently when I was putting together my behind-the-scenes videos for this song.
Oh, cool.
That I found the video where I had first kind of come up with the drum part and then the bass part and then this electric motif that comes throughout the song. So that was the original layer to the song. When I brought it to my two friends, David Contreras and Marco Fazio, those are the two producers with me on Echoed Love, I had already kind of had this demo that had those kind of electric, kind of hip-hop sounds to it.
Yeah.
And one thing that I thought was really important to do with this song was to create a sonic soundscape for what my sound is. Because with the previous album that I did, If Night Turns to Daylight, it was very eclectic.
And yeah, very, very.
Yeah, it's very much eclectic. Like, you have one song that sounds like a big band, and then the very next song sounds
Second
like...
Second Street, I think. Maybe.
Second Street, yeah, good memory. And then the other song on the end of the spectrum, you know, has like bluegrass sounds in I Choose You, and so... This one, I really wanted it to be like, this is what Lakin sounds like.
Okay.
And so that was really important for me going into this specific first single, because with Echoed Love, like you mentioned, you do have the marrying of kind of real sounds that are synthesized, and then that meets the acoustic elements of how people are used to hearing my sound.
The harmonies in the song, by the way, is this you doing overdubs or some backup singers or?
Both, actually.
Okay, okay.
So most of it is me doing overdubs, but I actually have my older brother singing on the song as well.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Okay.
So when you get to the second chorus, at the end of the second chorus is when you kind of hear more of a presence of the harmonizations in the background vocals. Then you'll hear him as well with the rest of the song, the three-part harmonies. He's singing like the lower parts there, which is pretty cool.
Okay. Okay. Now, something else just to point out on this, and we'll be hearing it in the background, the word echo. Echoing in the distance. Now, that's really my kind of editing or humor or thinking for theatrical effect. Oh, is this your idea? The engineer popped that in, or maybe to Bob Rossett, it was a happy accident somehow? To Bob Rossett.
You know, I was hoping with this song to have that very real element of the mirroring of what I'm talking about in the song and how that is actually produced in the song. So when I did that demo that I'd mentioned, I did have a lot of these elements already a part of the song. So I guess the hard part of doing this song with other producers was trying to get the vision that I already had and then have them elevate that.
Okay.
Yeah, so the echoes that you hear was like, that was an idea, but then the way that we produce the sound and how you hear it and where you hear it in the mix, you know, that was all part of the collaboration of the production.
So you brought that in from the get-go.
From the beginning.
Not only the demonstration, but you said, okay, but I want it to be this, and I want it to do this.
Right, exactly.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Now, this next question, I originally thought of it for Echoed Love, but it could really apply elsewhere in your writing as well. Was Echoed Love, or you can tackle another song on this one if you want, but is this written for someone specific, or is this more of a general scenario, a notion of what could be in some situation?
That's a great question, because I think most songwriters, you know, try to do both. Mm. I think the best ones do both.
They will.
And this song was no different in my attempt. It was written about someone in my life, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to describe it in a way that it was more applicable. So a lot of people actually think, you know, this song is this grand overture of like romantic love, but for me, it wasn't. And that's the mark, I think, of good songwriting, is that you can kind of bring in different elements that hit people in different ways. So for me, this song was much more personal in the sense of that it kind of resulted from a time in my life where I didn't have a lot of friends around because of things that had happened. And so this song was kind of, you know, a rumination on that bittersweet echo, if you will, of a person who's come into your life, and then for whatever reason, you don't have the presence as much as you'd like, or it disappears. You know, that's kind of the theme running through it. So that can apply to family, that can apply to friends, that can apply to romantic love. So yeah, that was kind of my goal in writing it, other than, you know, the personal
motivation. Sure. Do you have anybody that plays with you regularly? Any backup singers or the guy with the synth?
When I do live performances, I tend to rotate kind of the same group of people.
Okay.
For this track in particular, Echoed Love, Dave, Marco, and I all kind of played a lot of different things.
Okay.
So Dave, much more on the percussive end, he's a drummer. And so he played and programmed pretty much all of the rhythm that you hear in Echoed Love. And Marco and I, we kind of tackled the more harmonic elements. So the guitars, the pianos, the organ sounds, like all those kind of things, we kind of split those. So yeah, a lot of my stuff is very collaborative in that way, because I like to have the fingerprint of real musicians on songs, even if they are synth inspired or the instruments themselves are synth inspired. I like to have kind of that more human element, if that makes sense.
No, it makes very much sense. As a matter of fact, on Echoed Love, that intro synth sound that I was speaking about earlier, I was trying to decide at first if it was an organ sound and if those kettle drums, as I called them, were truly kettle drums, or if it was somebody hitting the electronic thing every so, you know. But
the beginning of the song, that's a perfect example. So we couldn't figure out exactly how to start the song, because when I brought the demo to them, it just kind of started with the guitar and the beat at the same time.
Ah.
And so I was like, well, that's a little too harsh. I want it to start with something else. So somehow, collaborative effort-wise, we came up with this swell at the beginning. And what you hear, that doom, doom, doom,
yes,
doom, it's just getting louder. So it's basically just the beat throughout the song.
Yeah.
But we kind of created a reverb that sounds like it would be like next door.
Okay.
And so it's getting louder and louder and louder, and the echo is like coming to you. So yeah, it's a mix between that synth sound, and then we've got layers of the organ and the guitar motif that's all like kind of mixed together, bringing you to the beginning of that acoustic sound.
The most flattering reflection, the sweetest shattering, was the sound of something breaking from walls to familiarity. There was nothing I could do, all the vulnerability. We found the best of the worst in our lonely humanity. Call it love, call it fiction, call it honorable addiction. Hers to hold on, hers to let go the most. Flattering affliction. Flattering affliction. Thought
Flattering Affliction. Let's talk about not just the title, but this notion of flattering affliction. I don't know if I can quote it right now. There's somewhere, I guess, is it fiction? Is it?
Yep, the lyric is, call it love, call it fiction, call it honorable addiction. Hurts to hold on, hurts to let go, the most flattering affliction.
That's it. So the a flattering affliction.
Yeah.
Did you come up with this phrase? Somebody, oh, that's such a flattering affliction. That's a song. I need to write that. How did this?
You know, it's funny. I think a lot of these phrases, these paradoxes, I use quite a bit. I mean, Silent Conversations is the name of the album and is also the name of the second single, which is where I got the name. But I like to use these very paradoxical phrases. I think that without even having consciously thought about this when I was writing those songs and always writing those phrases, I've kind of realized now in retrospect that what I love the most about using those kind of phrases is that when you're describing them, it shows kind of the range of humanity, because nothing's ever really that black and white when it comes to emotion and when it comes to what we feel. And so in that case, specifically Flattering Affliction, you know, I was thinking about like a relationship or even just an instance in a relationship where it simultaneously hurts, but you love it, you know? It's like the fact that you can love someone and that that can hurt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, one of my favorite lines of any of the lyrics on this album comes from the bridge of that song. As a matter of fact, I almost titled the album after this lyric.
Oh, really? Ooh.
Yes, but the lyric in the bridge says, while you're forgetting me, I'm still trying to remember. Bittersweet contains us like a fire in the winter. And then the lyric that I love is, everything that's worth it hurts some of the time.
Oh.
And so I think that is like the explanation for such a paradoxical phrase, right? It's like, anything that's worth it, whether it's love, whether it's success, whether, you know, anything, it's going to hurt some of the time. And so I think that's where that whole flattering affliction thing, it's like, it feels good sometimes, and then sometimes it tears you up, you know.
Put you in the gutter.
Yes, yes,
absolutely.
Everything that's worth it hurts some of the time. Everything that's worth it hurts some of the time. Everything that's worth it hurts some of the time.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Lakin. More at lakinmusic.com. We're talking not only about her new singles leading up to the release of her next album, but touching on some of her previous work as well. Also touching on Lost, the TV series. Maybe in a way one might not expect.
Sometimes I feel like I need someone, like all my demons survive all hell to find you. I know I can't change what I've done, but can I ever change who I want to be?
I wonder if you are the type of person to carry a notebook and grab that phrase when it happens, or do you have a method? I guess I want to know, when do you write and how do you write? Is it coffee at night and wine in the morning?
That's funny. You know, I would like to say that, you know, the best of my songs have come from spontaneous inspiration. But then I look at some of my songs that I really tried hard to write, and those can have as many qualities that I was looking to accomplish as well. And so I think for me, it's a mix of just being spontaneously inspired. And in those moments, yes, I will take out my notebook or I'll bring up my notes in my phone and write it down right away and kind of write what exactly I was thinking about that phrase. Because you can go back to it later and be like, what was that about? Like, it's a random word. Like, I don't remember what I was thinking. But then there's other songs, like there's a song on the album called Lost. And Lost was written, this is funny, after I got caught into the Netflix binging hole.
Oh no, is this the White Rabbit story?
No, but that's another
okay,
one.
I'll get to that one.
I did a series, basically. In that time, I did a series of writing songs about each episode of the beginning of the Lost TV series because I was just like, I need to do something constructive with my music.
Vent your anger at the TV show.
Exactly, yeah. Right? And so, you know what I loved about that show was that it did show the different sides of humanity in it. So I was like, this is a perfect opportunity. So the very first song that I wrote from that writing series that I started was Lost. And that was very much a song where I was like, I really don't want to write right now. I need to practice. I need to put it into existence. I need to write it down. That was probably one of my favorite songs that I've written for the album. And it is relatable to my life, but in a different way. Like, I had to look through somebody else's lens to get there.
Wow.
So, yeah, all that being said, that's one of my favorite songs on the album. At the very beginning of Lost, the first season, there's the pilot episode, and then after the pilot episode, they spend an episode on each of the main characters.
Each character, yes.
I think I wrote until the first 6 or 7 episodes, so it covered most of the main characters. So.
Okay.
Of all of those songs that I wrote, all of them kind of focus on a different character except for that one. Because that one is kind of the introduction of where are we, what is this,
okay.
What are we doing? And so the angle that I took in writing that song was from a perspective of using the island and being lost as a metaphor for people really being lost in their own lives and having to start over on an island, so to speak. How can I make a very literal thing more relevant figuratively? But I think that it also matches the show because even though they are stuck on an island literally, all of them get the chance to start over because they have all these crazy pasts and they have all these dark spots, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, what does it mean to start over? And what am I afraid of? You know, what am I looking forward to? You know, it's kind of all these elements of starting over. I was just telling somebody, I was like, I would really love to pick that back up because it is a good practice for writing to try to step outside of yourself.
Sure.
Try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes that maybe, like Sawyer, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yes.
What do I have in common with Sawyer? But then once you look at any character, once you look at perspectives out of their own eyes, then it starts to make them more human. And then you see like, oh, I guess we're not that much different because I can relate to this. You know, that they were feeling in this situation. And so it is a challenge, you know, to try to write from somebody else's perspective, not just from a TV show, but, you know, anybody, you know.
Could be a movie.
It could be a movie. Could be you.
That is really cool. That sounds like a fantastic exercise.
Yeah, it was great.
Wow. Okay, now another one. I believe this is also coming up maybe on the new release, White Rabbit. Now we're back to Lost already. White Rabbit, not the Jefferson Airplane tune, but this is another recent one for you. So is this also coming up on the new release?
No, it's not. It's actually just something that I wanted to put out just because I really liked the song. But it is, yeah, another demo from that Lost series writing exercise. And that one in particular focused on the episode. I think it's actually called White Rabbit, but it's the episode that focused on Jack, the protagonist, the main character of the series.
The surgeon, though.
Yeah, the surgeon. Yeah. It's kind of based on his story and feeling very alone, but having this weight on you to be a leader or to be the face of something, to have the responsibility for other people. And so I just was very intrigued by that aspect of his story, of his character's story on the show. Let it go now, let it.
We will, of course, and we have been talking about your music, but I may just easily have a little bit of George Benson playing in the background when portion airs, very specifically El Barrio with Joe Sample, and especially the Masters at Work mix. It starts with an extensive play of your dad. Can we share who he is and who he is around this region?
Yeah.
Cool.
So my dad's name is Dio Saucedo in Spanish. He born and raised in Riverside, studied at UCR, got his doctorate from UCR, but it might surprise people to know that his doctorate wasn't in music, yet he toured for 10 plus years with George Benson. So yeah, he started touring with George probably when I was about 3 or 4.
Okay.
But I mean, from the time I can remember, He always had different musicians in and out because he was a fixture in the Riverside area as well, doing jazz and R&B fusion with some of the guys in the area. So I just completely grew up in this musical vortex with these amazing musicians. And once he went on tour, you know, every now and then we would get to go to some of the places. But I can just remember, you know, so many times sitting backstage and watching from the side and just seeing up close, you know, this just excellence, you know, music excellence.
Yeah.
All of them, not just George. I mean, he's a living legend, but all those guys are so amazing at their crafts. And so, yeah, my dad was kind of, I guess, the most tangible first influence on my music career.
So I guess I was hoping to hear about what I would have presumed to be a very musical household as you were growing up, and sounds like it. Have you ever seen George years later and said, yeah, you knew me when I was 13?
Yeah, I still see him like almost every year. I mean, we try to go to one of his shows. Last fall, I think my wife and I went to Hollywood Bowl
and
saw him perform there. It's crazy that he's still performing as much as he is.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because he's in his 70s and still killing it. But yeah, it's funny. It's like, you know, we'll call him Uncle George, or call all the guys in the band who we've known, who have been with George and who we've known since I was young. You know, they're all like uncles to my brothers and I.
So that's pretty
amazing.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Lakin, talking about some of her past works. She has a few releases out there, but also some of the music finding its way to the next album out later this year. More at lakinmusic.com. One more thing, I guess, reflective of your father. Has he ended up on any of your discs? Because somewhere I think I even wrote down on Just Drive. Mm-hmm. Is that Dad?
Yeah.
because there is a percussive element to so much of your music, acoustic guitar driven that it is.
Yes. Yeah, there is a lot of rhythmic elements on most of my songs, at least the ones that aren't necessarily ballads. But he does play on most of my stuff. I'm going to say probably two or three of the tracks on Not Your Typical, half of the tracks on If Night Turns to Daylight, he played the percussion, either congas or just shakers or, you know, auxiliary things. And he will play on some of these tracks for the next album as well, yeah.
Probably, it's hard to stop a percussionist to just come in and...
You'll find something to drum with, yes.
The springs on these microphones even, just there's nice stuff all around us.
Oh yeah, you should see his bag of toys. It literally looks like toys, you know. It's just stuff that you can make noise with.
You know, I'm going to try to probably set up an interview with him sometime and bring in his bag of tricks.
That would be amazing.
Phenomenal. So since we did take a bit of a sidebar, let's do it again, or at least a time warp. These various elements that we find in your music, there are some that are just straight out or straight ahead, almost jazz. And this is what your bachelor's was in Long Beach. Was it Cal State Long Beach?
Cal State Long Beach, okay. Long Beach State, they call them.
Okay,
both, so.
Okay. And it was jazz studies, right?
Correct.
Okay, so why jazz? I mean, how did you end up there?
Well, it's funny because when I first started going to Long Beach, I had an idea that I wanted to major in music, but I wasn't 100%. Most music majors audition while they're still in high school to go into a college. I didn't do that. And that was because I didn't know what I was going to study. I didn't know what kind of program I wanted to be in. I just knew I wanted to be a singer-songwriter after all of it was done. And so when I first started at Long Beach State, I went to the music program and told them what I wanted to do and started taking the classes. And the first thing I did was I auditioned for the choir.
Okay.
And because I figured, you know, I don't really, like guitar, I was
okay. You were walking in with the sixth string and not a French horn.
Right. I was okay with saxophone, but I didn't want to study it because I didn't write on saxophone. So I was like, that's not really conducive to my growth and where I'm trying to go. And so I tried out for the choir. I think I sang Ave Maria, which probably every like beginner sings, but it was so funny. I still remember this and I laugh about it because I didn't take offense. I knew I was like, you know, behind the eight ball with this, but I went and tried out and the head of the program, he was so nice because he was like, you know, you have a very lovely voice. He's like, that being said, You know, you're going to need about 3 more years of training before, you know, we can accept you in the program. And really, I only wanted to get into the main choral program so I could go into the jazz vocal program, but you have to go into the regular one first.
Oh, it's a stepping. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
so you have to be there for 2 years, and then you can go into the jazz program. So I was like, okay, well, that's not going to work because I'm not trying to be here for 7 years. So I looked at my other options. I said, okay, well, what else could I do to be a music major? I was like, well, I'm okay at guitar. I have a pretty good ear, so let me try it. So I went in and tried out. And basically what they did was they accepted me what they call on extension, which is basically like you can take all the music classes, but you're going to have to pay for your own lessons because when you're accepted into a music program, they assign you a teacher, basically, your own like private teacher. Because after every semester, you have to have juries that you pass, which is basically like in front of the music board committee, you know, basically you perform and show that you're on track.
Yes.
And so basically I had to pay for those, but at the end of every semester I would have to try out with those juries to get into the program. So I think it took me 2 times, because I think I was accepted in the middle of my sophomore year, something like that. But I ended up passing by the skin of my teeth, and basically was because he was like, you know what, I can see that you have potential and you have a really good ear. Because I didn't know a lot of like the technical parts of guitar. I didn't know that much of music theory. You know, you learn what you learn in band, but it's nothing like, you know, reading chord charts and transcribing solos and nothing like that. So that's how I actually ended up in the jazz program. And yeah, I'm not going to lie, I hated it. Really hated it because I was so far behind.
They're out of our listening areas.
No, I mean, it's a good thing because it was so challenging to me that I appreciate it so much now because it taught me things that I would have never otherwise probably strived to do. Okay. But while I was doing it, I hated it because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so far behind everybody else, you know, and I had to catch up. And then on the side, you know, I was playing basketball with Long Beach State.
Yeah,
so that also brought a lot of stress to the situation. So now I'm really glad that I went through it. But at the time I was like, oh, this is awful. But yeah, I did, you know, I grew up with jazz, and so I love jazz still, and that was definitely something that I thought, okay, well, this could be something that could really benefit, you know, my career.
Sweet.
And it did.
It's Music in Conversation with Lakin for the entirety of tonight's KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Lakin, talking about some of her past works. She has a few releases out there, but also some of the music working its way to the next album, out later this year. More at lakinmusic.com.
Blank paper, wind blowing, real shiver, nose running, feels good. No worries, just a pen, blank paper.
Your first disc, Not Your Typical, and this is Not Your Typical, then there's an ellipse. Let's talk about this title. I suppose you left it vague on purpose. Not Your Typical what, okay?
Exactly.
You fill in the blank.
That is why I left it vague, because it was kind of like, well, when you listen to the music, I think you quickly realize that it's very not mainstream, especially that first record.
Yeah.
And it was very influenced by that time of studying jazz. I mean, I released that record, I think, my senior year in college or somewhere around there. So you do have a lot of acoustic elements. You have a lot of jazz elements. You have some rock elements. That was my first attempt at fusing together these different sounds at the beginning of me trying to find out, well, what is my sound?
Okay.
And so the Not Your Typical definitely applies to the music, but I think as a person as well, like even the cover that I chose, it's like I'm dressed up, but I have a tie on, you know?
Yes,
and it's
yes.
kind of this idea of like just me as a person. It was kind of the introduction for me. It's like I'm very much outside of the box, and like you said at the beginning of the interview, you know, it's hard without me saying it, you know, very explicitly. It's hard to describe kind of me as a person and musically, so that's why I chose that title.
Progressive folk, white acoustic jazz. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. Yeah, included on Not Your Typical, at the very end of it, there's Blank Paper.
Mm-hmm.
I love this one, and I love it for several reasons. One, the live setting. It feels almost like maybe it was at a house party or something like that.
that was the intent of it.
Oh, okay. Where was it?
That...
Was it really live or did you fake that?
Kind of both. It's interesting.
Spill
so
it.
On that album, Not Your Typical, Just Drive, Blank Paper, those two songs were recorded at the school at Cal State Long Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, my senior year, I had to take a class that was in audio engineering, and that was my first introduction to audio engineering, which is amazing. Richard Cooper, shout out to him because he ran that class and he was just so good at breaking down the science of it, but also, you know, the applicable parts of audio engineering. And that's where I first learned how to use Logic, which is my first step into production. And so we had to use some kind of recording, didn't have to be a full song, just be something. And that was kind of part of our project that accounted for a part of our grade. And so they just let us use the studio as well, you know, to create our projects while we were in that class. So what I did for Blank Paper was I did the basic part of that song, like the meat of it.
Yeah.
I did acoustically, you know, in the studio, polished it, got it done. And I actually invited about 10 to a dozen people into the studio, my friends, into the studio, and just put mics in the room, caught a bunch of their, you know, conversations, and kind of layered that. But the parts where they're singing, that's live, so we're all like singing together. And then I went back and layered that later as well. So
that's at the end. Okay, just the boys. Now the girl.
So that was actually like real time. Like, hey, let's try to capture this. But it just ended up being so fun because, you know, it does kind of have that element. And I would like to do that again with maybe one of the other songs that's coming up on this.
I hope you do. It gives it a, just again, it's a fun element. I also love it because, in all honesty, it's just a feel-good song. Unless I really misinterpreted lyrics in there, it feels good.
Nope, that's exactly what the song is about. It's just like being like cool, being
it's alright, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright.
You've mentioned this one a couple of times, and I actually had notes on it for Just Drive. This is going back to Not Your Typical. Just Drive, I think, is a really good example of a song being built and, to a certain extent, layered. It feels like maybe on this one, at least, you had the words, found some basic fingerstyle to accompany it, and then somebody came in afterwards with percussion over it. Are you often a words first kind of writer?
Oh, that's a good question. Honestly, it just depends. I love lyrics. I'm a huge lyric junkie, love poetry. My mom was the first to get me into that world of poetry, got me a Langston Hughes book. A diary, you know, so I could write lyrics. And I started writing when I was like 8, you know, just poetry about who knows what 8-year-olds talk about. But
Harlem Renaissance, I assure you. But yeah.
Yeah, no essays on that. But, you know, I love that aspect of it. And so I think a lot of times I do tend to come up with an idea first, lyrical idea. However, there are sometimes, you know, where the music comes completely first. And then I think the majority of the time, though, it's coming up with maybe a small idea on either side and then simultaneously building them back and forth. And so with Just Drive, man, that song, I feel like these are the best songs, at least in my mind they are, of my own.
I keep going back to that first album, so I'm not sure if...
Yeah, I mean, know, it's
new
just,
release coming, but...
Right? I mean, it's just, I can remember everything about writing that song because it was just written in one of just the worst weeks of my life. It was just, you know, I was physically exhausted, I was emotionally exhausted, I was just mentally exhausted, I was exhausted in every kind of way. And just kind of wishing to escape. And I remember I was sitting in my car in front of the house of the room that I was renting and just thinking, God, I wish I could just take off down the coast. Because, you know, Long Beach is right by PCH. And it's like, I would just love to get on PCH and just drive away from here forever. Like, that's what I felt like at the time. I was like, I just want to go. And so I came up with that lyrical idea. But a lot of times when I come up with a lyric, I hear something with it, whether it's like very specific line or whether it's a chord or whether it's kind of hard to explain because it happens so simultaneously. Same thing with music sometimes. It's like sometimes I'll hear a chord or a motif or something like that and be like, that just sounds like this emotion. And then I'll think of lyrics that match that emotion. So that's kind of how my writing process goes in general. But with Just Drive, that was definitely, it was a lyrical emotional idea first, and then it became the music and kind of stacked it. Which was never meant to be recorded, by the way. That was the project.
Really?
That was the very first song I did for that project.
This was the
college
class project.
It was. And then I was like, well, this is awesome. I should put it on a CD. So, yeah, it's funny.
That's incredible. Well, so we kind of touched on this then. How about a good example? Think of one of your songs, I don't care what album, whether it's coming up or past, one that started off as a cool riff that was not words first, but you had some sort of funk.
Yes.
And then this one deserves words.
Yes, actually, my favorite song that's going on this next album is the first one that pops to mind, and it's my first attempt at writing a song in Spanish, so it's half, I guess, maybe a little less than half in Spanish, and it's called A Mi Lado, which means by my side. That song, the inspiration came from a trip that I had taken on the East Coast. I was going to Boston area for the first time in the fall.
Okay.
And, you know, being from Southern California, we don't have seasons.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
we don't have real seasons.
Yeah, we don't have Boston. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have anything near what you experience going into that New England area in the fall. And I remember so vividly the beginnings of this song, and I always feel like those are the best ones because the inspiration is so keen. But I remember I was driving to a friend's house I was staying at in the area. I was driving on the main highway from the city, and just all along the freeway, I just saw these massive trees with all these colors, and it was kind of in the golden hour. It was a little bit when the sun was going down, and I just was so inspired by the beauty of that I heard music to it, literally heard it in my head. And so I took my phone and just started singing. You know, there's a... You'll hear it in the
snowy
actual...
snowy conditions.
And it actually was clear, though. It was, like, very clear, but it was just all the color. And so you'll hear it on the song. It's this guitar part that comes throughout the song, and it's like... Like, it just kind of mirrors, and that's, like, what I felt when I was driving, and I was, like, just looking at all this beauty. And so a lot of times when that happens, then the emotion kind of... dictates where the lyrics go. Because for the longest time I was like, all right, this song is called Autumn in Boston. Like, I didn't know what it was going to be about. And then eventually the lyrics caught up.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. The sole focus of tonight's show is with Lakin. She's just put out the first single from her next release, Silent Conversations, out later this year. More at lakinmusic.com. Here's where I demonstrate my being a little bit all over the place, but I suppose this will also demonstrate you too being a bit all over the place.
Yes, I am very much all over the place.
On YouTube, go to Lakin Music. You can find a mashup that you do, combining a bit of the looped beatbox that we were talking about, the looping earlier, with pumped up kicks, Radioactive, and what goes around comes around. This is Justin Timberlake thing at the end there. Is this a routine that you've been doing for a while? Was that a spur-of-the-moment thing?
I'm trying to think of how that came together. I'm fairly certain when I was still performing out on 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica quite a bit, which I hope to go back to soon, but in that time period, I was out there, you know, so many times throughout the month. You had to come up with a lot of material and quickly. And I think somewhere along the way in performing out there, I just started doing pumped up kicks, like just period. I just tried to, you know, create something for it.
As an acoustic Taurian-ness approach.
the bass, you know, doom, 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 like trying to put it into something. And I don't know where this came from, but in my mind I was like, wait a second, that's the same chords as what goes around comes around. Like, they're the same chord progression. And then I brought in Radioactive because the same, it has very similar chord structure. And so I just started messing around with it, with my looping pedal, and kind of came up with, I mean, that's really, I'm not exaggerating. I don't think I'm going to write anything as brilliant as that using somebody else's songs. Like, I've done a lot of mashups, but that's the very best one I could think of, just because, I don't know, it just flows together, and all of those songs to me kind of have a similar vibe. So I ended up playing it quite a bit, and people loved it so much that I had one of my friends help me do a video for it.
Cool. And this is, another one that you can find out there. Yeah, another, again, it's just fun.
Radioactive, radioactive, oh, 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 oh
always something new you didn't see before. There's always something familiar. The day to day will switch to night shine on. The moon comes out to play. And every time you go, we'll never be the same. It's mighty tame on a Tuesday. And on a holiday parade.
This is this close to having that 42nd Street feel.
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah, so let's talk to me about 2nd Street. Is this a Broadway revival sort of feel? What were you doing on this?
You know, so like I said earlier, with that album, If Night Turns to Daylight, it's not that it's not me, because I know who I am musically. I am all those things that you hear on the record. But it's like I didn't really have a vision of a sonic soundscape for that album, intentionally.
Okay.
I wanted it to be eclectic. Intentionally, I wanted to take all of the things that I've written and put it out there and say, well, what feels right to me? And so with 2nd Street, that was also another song that barely made it on the album because I had already had the main songs of that collection already chosen, and 2nd Street was written a little bit later. And I've always had this thing as a songwriter, maybe not as an artist, you know, but as a songwriter, I've always had this thing of like, I want to write every kind of song.
Yeah, good. Okay,
and
yeah.
just to do it, you know, just nice. Because I enjoy all kinds of songs. And that was definitely the case with 2nd Street. I was like, you know, I've always wanted to write, you know, a song that kind of had the feel of the old jazz that I love the most. Like,
yeah.
I love that old 40s kind of sound, but also kind of borrowed from the Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, you know, big band feel. Yeah, I just started writing it. It's written about Long Beach, 2nd Street in Long Beach. It literally talks about places on 2nd Street.
Huh?
I was sitting there one day with my roommate at the time, and we were sitting on the patio on 2nd Street. And we were there on Halloween, which is funny. If you see the video, we actually were able to record it on Halloween. Part of it was on Halloween. And so you see what I saw when I was writing the song, because I was like, this is so weird. Like, this
so
place.
So do we see? Describe that. Do we have the freaks wandering by?
I mean, you just have people.
Frankenfurter and bunnies all at the same. I mean,
nothing crazy, but just like you see the full range of people that come through. Everybody was dressed up, and then you have all these different parades that are happening. There's like a dog parade they do that used to be on 2nd Street. It's no longer on 2nd Street, but you have a dog parade where people are, you know, dressing up their dogs, and there's just so many kinds of people that you find on 2nd Street that I was like, this is pretty weird, and I love it, and that's part of the reason why I've always loved Long Beach. But yeah, it's just kind of about that mix of eclectic people and demographics. And so I ended up writing the song, and I was like, well, this is a good one to make big band. Sure, yeah, let's do it. So yeah, that was my reasoning. There really wasn't any. I was just like, you know, okay. I really want to write this song, and there it goes.
Cool. Okay. It's again, it was one that I wrote down for a reason. It caught my ear. It's just many, many on here. And again, these three discs, not your typical Night Turns to Daylight. Well, also the Christmas EP and the one that's set to come out soon, Silent Conversations.
Yes.
Is there a release date set yet? I mean, I know you're wanting to do a release per month. So does that take us to November or?
Yeah. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm probably going to release the actual album in October if all goes to plan. If I do all 11 songs, yes, I will release the last one after that. And really the reason for that, it was twofold. One, because I'm an independent artist, and so I'm fundraising basically the whole thing myself. And I have had a lot of people take part in the fundraiser aspect, which I have on my website. If people want to get involved, you know, I've created this kind of system that's basically like a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But, you know, people can basically buy different rewards to help me make certain things. And same thing with the house show tour that I did last year and that I will be doing again this year, is just to help with the financial aspects of that. So it kind of helped, because with everything being released, a single per month, and it spaces it out.
Sure.
And it gives me time to kind of catch up. So that was the first reason. But the second reason was that I thought from a marketing standpoint, especially in this day and age where myself included, we're all streaming things.
Yep.
You know, we're hearing singles on the radio or on XM, FM radio and satellite radio, streaming radio. It's just things have to catch you right then, or it's like gone into the oblivion. And so I was like, well, if I release an album, then I have to put this whole huge effort into like, how do I capture people's attention over a long period of time? And so coupled with the financial thing, I was like, well, why don't I just do a single per month, and then every single month I'm having something different that people can focus on.
Okay.
And I've actually heard of one other group, I think it was Oh Wonder. They did it with their debut album as well, where they had, I think they had 12 songs, so they literally took a whole year to do it. But, you know, it's I think it's been nice so far to do it one at a time, because it does, in a way, kind of give the songs a different kind of credence that you wouldn't get if you just throw them on an album, because people are going to listen to their favorites and then kind of skip the rest. With this one, I'm almost, not literally, but kind of forcing people to like take notice of any song that I put out, because it's the only one out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so yeah, so like with this one, for instance, with Echoed Love and Silent Conversations that's coming out next month, you know, I did a 3-part behind the scenes video with Echoed Love that shows the process of it, which I'm going to do the same with, hopefully, with all of the songs.
Cool.
And so I've begun to do, you know, the videos for Silent Conversations as well. And what I found so far is that it is really interesting, even me as the artist that puts out the songs, like how much you forget goes into the making of it, or how much, you know, emotion kind of comes in and out of it, and the different people that it's passed between. And so bringing that to the forefront of the audience mind, I think that it does give it a little bit more of a special aspect to it, because people can really delve into each one and see, okay, like, where was she coming from? Oh, how was this created? And
beautiful.
It's pretty fun to see, even from myself. Like, I've looked back at the videos and been like, man, that was a really, really cool process, and I'm glad I did it that way.
It's a good video diary. And this monthly thing, it's a long, slow, drawn out tease of sorts. You're keeping people on the edge.
Yeah. And I think, once the album is released, you know, say it's released in October or November, you know, then I'll have like a big release show and do everything with the full band and, you know, do all the merch and all that stuff for the new record.
Cool.
You say impossible, but you know I ain't a liar. You feel intangible, but you feel my desire for you. Screaming from the depths of my soul, there you are, and I won't let go. Still, I know that you. And I hear you thinking, I'm just a little unsure, I'm just a little unsure, I'm a paradox in your intoxicating. Don't it seem show that I'm just a little unsure, one foot in, one down of the door. And I try to run, but there's no one who loves me more than you.
To wrap, I'd like to hear what this disc is for you. And we may have addressed this to a certain extent, but in answering that, is there a way to address whatever growth or change that's happened from disc to disc? Mm-hmm. Can you put that sort of hindsight description into the senior year in college CD, and then If Night Turns to Daylight, and then this one coming up? Can you describe those plateaus? Or
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I think that first record, you know, was coming into adulthood, you know. Those songs were written from the time, I think the earliest one was Blank Paper, and that was written my senior year in high school. And then, it, you know, it does stretch into that time in college, so it's kind of like coming into adulthood is the first stage.
Okay.
And then that second stage of If Night Turns to Daylight, that one was kind of getting into some of the demons. You know, everybody has their own demons, and so it was kind of seeing, okay, these are the things that keep popping back up, you know, in my life, and trying to figure out, well, like, how do I deal with those? And then this album is kind of like heading the demons straight on and saying to the world, this is what they are, and this is now who I am and who I'm trying to be. And to be more specific, this album is very special for me. Not that the other two didn't borrow from that time capsule, but this one, I took so long to choose all the songs that are going on this album in particular because I wanted them to revolve around this theme of my life that started from the last album on. And so the short version is that I met my wife. We met when I was in college, and it's been quite a while. We've known each other for about 13 years. But we didn't start dating until a lot of years later because I was always part of a church that said that those unions were not allowed. Yeah. And so when you hear...
this Romans, okay, yeah.
Yeah, when you hear If Night Turns to Daylight, I start to touch on some of those issues, like some of the relational things. And granted, not all of them are like specifically, you know, this is what this is about. And some of them are more general, like we were talking about earlier, of just like the emotion of something. But some of them were very pointed. Like Kiss Me Goodbye is very pointed.
Oh, is it?
You know, from that record. And so you start to see it. But from that time... I had started dating her because I was so conflicted that I just kind of threw my hands in the air and I was like, whatever, it's going to be what it's going to be. And I basically was confronted by the leaders of my church and they basically gave me an ultimatum and said, you know, you can either stay with us and accept our resources or you can stay with her and be forced, you know, to leave your membership. And so,
adios.
You know, I chose her and it was very, you know, a lot of people who are listening or would hear that story would be like, yeah, forget them, whatever, like give them the middle finger. But it wasn't that case for me. It was very difficult. It was really hard, you know, because they were such a big part of my life. And that was such a big part of my life, spirituality and all these things. So when you listen to this record, what you will hear, and not specifically relating to my story, but you will hear stories of the conflict, and you'll also hear stories that capture the elation. Like you're gonna hear the highs and lows, because that's exactly what it was. It was like, you know, I have this amazing relationship, you know, we get married, we have this whole different life together, and then you have, you know, like I was saying about Echoed Love, you know, it's like you have friends that leave and you have relationships that you're trying to grasp, and then maybe those don't work out, and now you're trying to figure out, okay, well, where do I belong? Who am I? What do I believe anymore? And that's kind of where this album catches me. It's going to tackle not just the hurt and betrayal, and it's not just going to capture the joy of being in love and being with someone. It's going to capture everything in between. It's going to capture the conflicted emotion. It's going to capture the just introspective, like, whys, you know? And
good.
Yeah, that's why I was very specific on which songs I wanted to choose for this, because I was like, it should, when I listen back to this in years to come, I'll be like, yeah, that was from that time. I can tell.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Echo love, feeling your echo.
The sole focus of tonight's show is Lakin, a singer-songwriter out of the Los Angeles area, though a Riverside native. More at lakinmusic.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Once again, though, thanks to Lakin and also to Ross French, who got this going in the first place, letting me know that one of his basketball buddies was an incredible musician. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wadd, Benjamin Perper, Jesse Rosales, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVCR, it's generally composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, but tonight, staying with the music of Lakin, this is one of hers recorded in the studio here at KVCR. Came out nicely. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.
into